Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
An Erio's original.
Welcome to Foxy Brands. I'm Priyanka.
I'm Camilla, and this is a podcast that navigates beauty and wellness from our perspectives as women of color.
This week, like every week, we're talking stuff and things, tips and tricks, and deconstructing Western beauty standards. And we are joined by special guest Aisha Sisse. So Aisha is an American journalist of Sierra Leonean and British descent. She's just come off 13 years at CNN. Is that
count the gray hairs.
Oh my goodness, come on. Where she was an anchor and correspondent, but she left cable news to write about her time covering the 2014 abduction of 276 schoolgirls by the terrorist organization Boko Haram in her book Beneath the Tamarind Tree.
Welcome.
Thanks.
So lovely to have you here.
It's good to be here. Where do we start?
I mean, it feels kind of crazy to say that she's been covering the abduction and go straight into beauty products, but that's how we go. That's what we do.
And through beauty and wellness, I found balance.
Yes absolutely. So. That's how you pull yourself away from all the like heaviness of your actual life.
Exactly.
The first thing we do is talk about stuff and things, which is like a product, a service, a class, a fitness thing, a mental health thing that you have enjoyed in the past like week or so. We can start so you have time to think.
Okay.
Okay, great. What is your stuff and thing this week, Cam?
Mine is actually Sephora's return policy. It's okay. Well, I didn't realize that they actually had a very decent return policy. I thought it was just like a standard, you know, if you've used it, you can't return it. Turns out that's not true.
How much can you use?
As much as you bloody like. So I was told by a listener, Alex, who basically anything under a year, you can return it to Sephora, no questions asked.
That sounds well dodgy.
Right?
To use our language from the home country.
Indeed, indeed. But I walked into Sephora the other day with like a bag full of stuff and I said, hi, I can't use some of this stuff. Some of it didn't agree with me. Some of it I didn't like. Some my dermatologist doesn't want me to use. And she didn't care. She was just like, zip, zip.
No.
And then put everything back onto a gift card and then I walked away.
Wait. But you don't need receipts. You don't need anything.
Because with Sephora, everything's tracked in your purchase history because you've got that little phone number. So everything's all there. So everything you've ever bought from Sephora is in that list, which was horrifying as well.
Yes. Well, it's interesting to see how probably that's evolved over time.
Oh,
that's interesting.
That was really, really fascinating. Yeah. So everything's there. And so long as it's within the last 12 months, they'll just, you know, beep it back and then you get a little gift card. So I returned, and it was a combination of things. There were like a couple of like foundations that I didn't really like. There was a couple of lipsticks, an eyebrow thing, which I don't use anymore since I've had mine microbladed. A few bits and pieces, and I got back about like $300 or something.
That's wild.
It was great. And then I turned around and used that immediately on some stuff that I did actually need. So I got some Drunk Elephant vitamin C serum, and then I got these Dr. Gross peel pads, which Kilo Quiche recommended to us. And then, by the way, the new Sephora at the Grove.
Is it rocking out?
It's massive.
Okay, I have to
go. It's enormous. And if you spend over $200, you get a free facial. So I had a hydrafacial in the middle of the store.
Wow.
Which was incredible.
But I was going to say, was that relaxing though in the middle of the store?
It was actually,
it was like, free.
It was free. Yes. It was free relaxing.
Indeed. So it was very much like, you know, it's basically taking like a wet Hoover to your face and just vacuuming out all of your stuff. And then in a very insane way, they show you afterwards what has been taken out of your skin. In this little thing, which is kind of gross but also very fascinating.
How much does it usually cost?
I don't know, maybe like $50 or something. Wow. I don't know, I'm guessing, actually I have no idea. But so
was there an announcement in the store, willing victim for facial in aisle 5? Gather around, ladies and gentlemen, gather around.
That's incredible.
It was great. And then also, you know, the thing I always forget is that they do, well, they'll make you a sample of anything.
That's true. Yeah. You can try anything.
Yeah, so
you don't know all of this.
It's the same at Whole Foods.
What?
They will open any package for you. So wait, you can try it.
Shut up.
Yes.
Anything.
Yes, because I took a smoothie off the shelf. I was starving and thirsty and I was like, this looks fine. And I drank it. I hated it.
Yeah.
And I was like, just so you know, I hated this. I did drink from it, but I'll pay for it. And they were like, no, you don't have to. And I was like, what do you mean? They said, you can try anything in the store.
These are interesting business models, I have to say.
Well, they make some. What does it matter?
God, first of all, Whole Foods is owned by Jeff Bezos now. So
it's a business model, fine. Be damned.
Yeah, they said you can try anything. Like if there's a package of nuts, you can like open it up, try it, and you can sample anything in the store.
I am going to go to Whole Foods and sample some caviar. Yeah. Tonight.
I'm gonna try this and this and this and this. Don't like it.
I gotta make a little meal, a little snacky meal.
Sample some Melba like, toasts and some beluga caviar. That is what I'm gonna do at the fish counter.
Listen,
for dinner.
I was like, they don't advertise that. He's like, no, why would we? And I was like, good, you're right. That's an excellent point.
But now we know, and now exactly. Everybody listen, Foxy Browns.
You can make a big day.
Honestly,
out of Sephora.
We're not gonna make a single dent in Jeff's money. No, Jeff is just fine.
My stuff and thing from this week is I've been doing the Liberty Beauty Advent Calendar.
It's very good.
Some great, some middling, some not so great. However, that eye cream.
Mm, I haven't opened mine yet.
Incredible.
Oh, really? What's it? Who's it by?
Dermalogica.
Oh, really? Yeah. In an advent calendar. Yeah. Now, this is a high-class advent calendar.
It's
very good. But the value, unparalleled.
The value, first of all, it's a full-size tube of the Dermalogica eye cream, which I have to say, I sort of like see through Dermalogica because the packaging is not attractive.
No, at all.
Yeah. Right? And to me, a lot of it is just like, oh, it's cute, it's pretty, I'll buy it.
But that gray, the white, it's just like, blah. Exactly.
No, but it's a wonderful texture. It really kept me moist without being greasy. Mm-hmm. Because when it's greasy, it can kind of like, you know, it can create, what's it called? Like milia or those like little white bumps.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really, really liking it. And you know how long I've been looking for an eye cream that I like. And so this tube, apparently, I looked up, I was like, how much could this cost? $56.
No way. Wow. So first of all, let me just ask, how big is the advent calendar?
It's 31
it's
days.
Big. It's, I mean, size-wise, if it's carrying full-size products.
Like 2 feet by 2 feet.
Do you need someone to help you carry said advent calendar?
No, you can lift it up. it just
sounds pretty.
Yeah.
But it was large. The calendar was $270,
something like that. No, it's not that much. No.
Wasn't it $250, maybe?
I think it's about $250.
About $250. Yeah. But if that was $50 and there's 25 more things.
Yeah.
That's value for money. Yeah. That's good value for money. But I'm yet to find an eye cream that doesn't make me break out.
Well, try it.
So I will have to. It doesn't matter what it is. The moment I put it under my eyes the next morning, I have a kind of irritation and I start to break out. So
I think a lot of them have retinol in them. Things that'll like kind of strip and like, but this just seems like a moisturizing one. It's not, you know, it's not trying to like eat away your skin. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll take that.
Yeah.
My stuff and things. Meditation. I have been trying to be diligent in practice. I did the TM, the Transcendental Meditation course.
Me too, I love it.
I have to admit, though, not managing to do a full 20 minutes. Mm, 20 minutes is a lot. It's a lot. But what I am doing is doing 10 minutes of meditation, and I'm doing 10 minutes of a guided meditation using the Insight platform.
Okay.
Which has someone... this particular teacher called Sarah Blondin, who has a series called Living Awake, and just beautiful, just, you know, kind of honoring life. So they're under different headings, subject matters, honoring life, letting go, self-love. And I'm doing the 10-minute ones. Mm-hmm. So 10 minutes of TM, 10 minutes of Sarah Blondin.
Oh my gosh.
That's how I'm rocking out this last week.
And how are you? Are you feeling different at all in the rest of your day?
I am, because I've been doing the one around honoring life, which is really about gratitude.
Yes.
And gratitude, they say, is the foundation of abundance. And gratitude, if you can operate from there, it just kind of opens you up to possibilities, to life. And, you know, it's just taking a position. I mean, it's also about POV, your point of view. And so regardless of what it is, to be grateful, no matter what form it comes in, to understand it could be worse, I find is very calming and centering. And so I'm really trying to dedicate myself to the theme, the principle of gratitude in 2020.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
I like that too.
I find that deeply. Sorry, that hit.
Harder than I expected. I love it. Okay, so what's the app called again?
It's called Insight.
Insight, okay.
So well, I've been using that, and it has, I think, hundreds and hundreds of different guided meditations, and you can use it as a timer,
oh, great.
Which I use also just to time my TM.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll definitely look into that. That sounds really, really good. I talk about TM all the time. Well, you can't do it and then benefit from it without sounding like a crazy person when you talk totally. About it, because it's not something that you can talk about until you've experienced it. But for me, it's really...
Are you doing daily?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And when I go without, I go nuts.
Really?
Yeah, I get real sad.
So what time day do you do yours?
I do it on a good day. Like sometimes I do have to skip a day or whatever. Mm-hmm. I do it as soon as our nanny shows up to take care of our daughter, which mm-hmm. is 8. So I do it right before I start my day. So I'm like done with TM by like 8:30. And then I do it before I pick up my son from school. So whether I'm in the car, twice a day.
Wow. Yeah, now I'm feeling a little, slack.
I mean, I'm not meditating at all. So I feel very, very slack.
Well,
but
the only reason is I was very diligent about it at the beginning and I felt such a benefit that I know now that when I don't do it, I feel different. Yes. It's like you in exercise.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like I know how it feels when I don't meditate.
Yeah. And how do you feel when you meditate?
I feel much less anxious. I feel much more even keel and capable. Mm. I just feel like it's like a chemical wash for my brain. I just feel so much more calm about things.
And creatively, because my TM teacher made a big deal out of saying a lot of celebrities that we know, from mm-hmm. Lionel Richie to even Michael Jackson, all did TM, and it helped them with a lot of songs that we know, they unblocked them creatively.
Yeah. I would say that the benefit that I felt creatively or even in anything pertaining to my work is that all the noise and the kind of frantic feeling of like, there's so much to do, there's so much to do, there's so much to do, that all clears away. And it's just, my day is very clear. I know what I have to do. I know what order I need to do it in. I find it easier to focus on tasks and like really, it's helped me with everything. I'm a better mom, honestly. I'm a better partner. Like I'm less short tempered. Like it was a weird one. Like, my husband made me go.
It's like the Peloton ad.
No, it really is. It's very, my husband made me go to therapy and made me go to meditation.
I support therapy.
Dragged, kicking and screaming. And obviously it changed my life for the better in so many ways. God bless him. But once I went, I was like, oh crap, I could have lived like this my whole life. I felt so dumb. I was like, why do I have to be 38 and pregnant to figure this out? The things I could have achieved. But
I love
whatever it was. But Aisha, we're so excited to have you here today. I'd love
Thank
to talk
you.
A little bit about your path. I mean, you're obviously a beautiful woman on the outside, but also the inside, the things you've done. I mean, the things you've seen. Can you walk us through like just your journey? Like, where were you born? What is the background of your parents? How you ended up at CNN? Like all that stuff.
Ooh. The origin story.
Yeah, please.
You need a blankie. So both of my parents are from Sierra Leone in West mm-hmm. Africa, but were in London finishing off various studies. My father was a lawyer. My mother was an academic and doing a PhD when they had children in London. And so I was born in London along with my siblings and was, pretty happy-go-lucky child and expected my life to carry on in London and then turned 7 and my parents were like, okay, we're moving back to Africa.
Okay. Oh.
And I was like, what?
Where?
Why? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. So at 7, I was moved to Sierra Leone, where my father picked up his career. My mother started teaching at the University of Sierra Leone, which was really a lovely thing for me as a child because I grew up on campus.
Yes, that's
so nice. That kind of idyllic, and it's kind of on this massive hill.
Yeah,
and kind of really cut away from the rest of Freetown, which is kind of teeming hectic. And sprawling and hectic. Yeah. But this was kind of like the sun-bleached, idyllic spot with wildly overgrown bushes and tall grass with hibiscus and bougainvillea everywhere. And I went to the local primary school with all the other lecturers' kids. Mm-hmm. But what that also did was, growing up with other academics' kids, is makes you fiercely kind of competitive.
Oh, sure.
Because everyone's parent is at home saying, you better do well.
Yeah.
You better do better than Dr. Sawyer's kid who lives like 2 doors down.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Sierra Leone and I was there from 7 to 16.
Oh, wow.
Spent my formative years there. And, one of the other things that I've always been super grateful for is you know, there's obviously an element of deprivation, or I should, deprivation might be too strong a word, but they're things you just can't easily access.
Yes, absolutely.
By, you know, growing up in a developing country like Sierra Leone. And there is a huge upside to that in the sense that, you know, the ready access to makeup alcohol and, you know, just the trials and tribulations of being a teenage girl and media and, you know, particularly growing up in Africa where, you know, being black and being in a place where we're the majority, my beauty norms were formed by, I felt, were very inclusive. Like I look like the majority. So there was never that outsider feeling of too fat, too dark, wrong type of hair. You know, because I grew up amongst my people.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But
imagine,
you know,
cannot relate.
It's just, you know, just one of those things. It was never like, did you get the latest lipstick this week or the latest nail color? Yeah. Just not part of our existence. But I moved back to England when I was 16 because I wanted to be an actress.
What made your parents want to move back to Sierra Leone at that point?
My parents had a very clear vision of not just their lives, but the lives they wanted their children to have, which was to be able to feel connected to their roots. And they felt very strongly that they didn't want us to ever be in a place where, you know, years later we went home and everyone said, who's that kid? We don't know you. You don't know where you're, you know, who your relatives are, and you just felt again like an outsider. So for them it was like, you know, an act of service for them that we go back and we grow up in that environment, and it has largely shaped everything that I do, because you can't grow up and come from relative comfort, not wealth. I mean, my parents are middle class working people, but comfort relative to everybody else. Well, I guess a lot of people can, but I took from that experience a real desire to help make the world better in whatever way I can. And so I went back to...
So you were like, acting.
Acting. I was going to say, having said that, acting feels like a bit of a detour.
You were 16. You were allowed.
And I was convinced that I was going to be the next great talent. I was going to be the next... I was going to be the Black Meryl Streep.
There's still time.
I'm getting up there. So
like, you got 30 years.
You're right. And so I, you know, we used to spend our summer holidays in London. And one summer holiday, I said to my mom after doing a summer camp at the London Academy of, I think it was Music and Dramatic Arts. And I said, they're starting an after school program. I'm going to, you know, audition. And I got in, and my mother was like, okay. She's like, you sure you don't want to move back? You don't want to go back home to finish your A-levels? Your end of high school exams? I was like, nope. She was like, okay, well, later. So I left home at 16. And so I was living in London with an aunt who was nominally there, and navigating life, not going to school very much, it has to be said. I bunked off a lot.
Of course, why would you not, with all of that freedom and an aunt that's kind of normally there?
Having grown up with an academic and like these fiercely... So I stayed home and I watched a lot of Neighbours, which... And I practiced my acting and learning how to cry on cue.
From Neighbours.
Neighbours has range.
Absolutely.
Like,
turned out some real talent.
Indeed.
Kylie Minogue, Jason Donovan.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Wasn't Isla Fisher? Oh no, was Isla Fisher from
Home and
Away?
No, Home and Away. She was Home and Away.
But yeah.
So I did.
Margot Robbie.
Was Margot Robbie on Home and Away?
I think so. She was with one of, because there are only two acting jobs in Australia. Yeah. So it's one of the two. The Hemsworths, all of them. All of them, Neighbours on Home and Away.
Yeah. How did I not get a... Well, I guess I should have been born in Australia, New Zealand, whatever.
There are only two jobs.
So, but everything went kind of horribly wrong when my teachers at school, who called me in having missed most of the first year of A-levels, said, you know, if you would focus, you could get into Oxbridge, you could get to Oxford or Cambridge. And I made the mistake as an African child telling an African mother that I could go to Cambridge.
Oh, no,
and
don't do that.
Then it became like, you know, well, forget you acting. It's now her mission in life to make sure I get there. And when I got to Cambridge, I found so much that was great and wonderful and wrong and toxic.
Yes.
That I really started my activism there, which has kind of led me down this path to getting into journalism. It was I went to Trinity College, Cambridge, the largest of the Cambridge colleges, with only 33% women, with a culture of misogyny and just rampant, you know.
I cannot imagine.
I do not know a single non-white person who has had a positive experience at Oxbridge.
Yeah.
You see, and I would counter that because I did not have a negative experience. I think really what I found really troubling was that to have a good experience as a person of color or as a woman in those environments, you had to be of a particular personality type, which... I'm one of these people who can move in any circle and I can get on with everyone. Yeah. So I can hang out with the sporty crowd, the musical crowd, the theatre crowd, the nerdy crowd. And so I kind of like, I'm amorphous that way.
But you're a journalist. That's
exactly. Yeah. So that's it. But on average, most people of colour felt quite confined to hanging out with other people of colour. Most women, particularly at Trinity, if they weren't outgoing and deemed attractive were largely marginalized and shut out to the point where you couldn't go into the college bar and feel comfortable. Oh my gosh. Like it was literally run by the cool kids.
Right. And you're like an outgoing, attractive girl. And so they're like, you're great.
And but that was just wrong. And so you have all these people suffering and feeling completely cut out of college life. And so that kind of became a bit of a mission of mine. And so I ran for student union and then I resigned in protest from student union.
There you go. We love to see it.
Well, you can take the girl out of drama school.
Oh,
you can't take the drama out of a girl.
I didn't, and I didn't resign quietly, people. I was like, you know, some.
What's the point of resigning quietly?
You know, it was with great fanfare.
This is a personal favorite, is actors who become other things because you never lose it. I'm like, did you major in theater? And they're like, why do you ask?
I'm like, maybe the way you projected just then.
You got a lot of personality for a chemist, is all I'm saying, you know. You did it, man. So then what took you from...
So I gave up the acting there. What did you study? English. Didn't really go to class very much either there, mainly because there were just so many issues to fight, so many things to do. There were no lights on the back avenue. So people coming back from late lectures were scared, but they didn't want
women.
To,
you mean
women? Yeah, they didn't want to put lights there because you know it's historic and pretty.
Too pretty. Yes,
you know what I mean.
We want this moody alley because kind it's of evocative of Jack the Ripper, you know,
exactly,
which is traditional. So we're going to keep it that way.
The golden age. Jack the Ripper.
With the mist coming off the river cam, you know, casting a dark shadow. You know, there was just a lot to agitate over.
This is so interesting. I have never, yes, obviously, like the second you mentioned it, I was like, oh, it would be a hell.
Yes.
It would be pure hell for anyone with any sense who's a woman of color. My goodness.
Yeah. And so it was 3 years where, you know, I started a college magazine which named and shamed all those lecherous guys who prey on new students.
Amazing.
I mean, and which was, as you can imagine, made me deeply, you know, really popular.
This is so spicy. I love it.
And
this is where you get to be. This is where it helps to be pretty.
Yeah, you're right.
Facts. Facts. Yeah. All I'm saying is they were like, well... She's a little spicy.
Especially the 70-year-old, you know, fellows who called me up and said, you really have to come to class. Yeah. You know, you can't just not come.
It's in protest.
It's like, you have to come. And I'm like, but why? A bunch of misogynists mainly and don't call on females in the sessions.
What's the point?
What's the point here?
Yeah.
But that really kind of set me, and then I wrote for the college, the actual university newspaper, and that kind of set me on the journalism path. And I decided that I wanted to work in television, also largely because everybody else was applying to McKinsey and everything else. And I didn't want to be a lawyer. I wasn't a medic. I wasn't a vet.
Mm-hmm.
I decided I wanted to get into issues like TV. And back then, that really meant Kilroy, which Camilla will know. Back in the day, our talk show of some note, a former British MP who got his own talk show, which was initially issues led, then mainly became I Slept With My Daughter's Husband.
Yeah, yeah.
and I took diet pills and tried to kill my children.
Tried to kill anyone.
Yeah, anyone. My, and that was my first job in television, which was booking guests. And I will say it's the best job I've ever had.
Wow.
Because, I mean, Robert, everybody knows, is kind of horrific as a boss. But it taught me how to interview people. It taught me how to, sadly, push people's buttons and get them to share things they never should tell anybody. So I went from that to other talk shows and then moved to BBC Scotland. I lived there for 3.5 years before I realized that as a black person, I wasn't going to work. I moved back to London and eventually ended up at Sky Sports News as a sportscaster, the ultimate boys club.
Of course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just diving right in.
Dive right, you know,
Cambridge,
right in.
Sports.
Makeup artists who didn't know how to do black skin. So I'd wear green jacket and green eyeshadow.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great, great, great.
There was a lot of that.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
What?
There's a lot of green eyeshadow and green jackets. A lot of blue eyeshadow and blue jackets. Why now, I should also add that my mother decided that, you know, she was going to have a local African tailor make these jackets, which never fit quite right.
Oh, my gosh.
They were quite boxy.
This is very House of Darion.
Yes. It is
right
very
now.
House of Darion. Very, very much so.
Weirdly triggering me. Because it's like you can't turn your back on your culture. You can't say no to your mom.
No.
So you got to do it.
She'd arrive and she'd open the case and there'd be jacket after jacket in wilder and wilder shades of orange and lime green and vermilion. And and I would rock those.
On sports.
Yes.
On sports.
Yeah.
Did you have any interest in sports? You're really
no, but listen, it got to the point where I left Scotland and I'd lived on my aunt's couch for a few weeks, gotten a part-time job presenting something, and that turned out to be a kind of dodgy network, a digital network that folded. And then I got an agent who said, okay, truth be told, and I've never really said this publicly, that I got a new agent who said Sky was doing open auditions. And I honestly thought I was going for an audition at Sky News.
Right.
Oh. Actually, it was at Sky Sports.
Right. So they're like, excuse me, what?
When they said read, I said, what is that?
Sports.
I was like, who?
The cricket.
Patrick Vieira? Who is that?
What country is he prime minister? Oh. He plays badminton. No.
But funnily enough.
Coaches badminton.
Yeah. I mean,
worse than a professional as a badminton coach. Sorry. Jokes aside. No, it's very funny. This is very funny.
This is traumatic. So I sit there.
Oh my God.
At first, it started all very well, the screen test. They said, tell me about your day. And I can natter to a wall.
Yeah.
And I did this and I did this and I had breakfast and I did this. And apparently the exec there, Karen Wilmington, called up to the editor and said, you better come down. We have a live one here. Come down and see her. And then they ran the prompter. Then it got a little tricky. Then it got a little tricky. And I was like, Crystal Palace played Manchester United. And the whole time these sirens are going off in my head. I'm like, holy shit. I'm doing a sports interview and I have no idea. And yet I got a call back. And I walked into this man's office, Andy Cairns, who's the head of Sky Sports, and I sat down and he asked me a series of questions. Who manages this team? Where does this team play? He asked me 5 questions and I was like, I got nothing.
Sorry to this man.
Sorry.
And he said, that stuff can be learned.
Yeah. At which point he said, but are you willing to learn? And I thought to myself, for a job and a steady paying opportunity, you're damn right I am.
Correct answer.
And I was the only black woman on Sky Sports News. And to date, I am still the only black woman they have had on Sky Sports News. And I left
in 2005.
Oh my God.
And they have not had a black female anchor on contract the whole way through.
That's a bummer. And yeah, it's completely unsurprising.
Entirely unsurprising.
Completely unsurprising.
Mm. But then there comes a point where you say, I cannot talk about, you know, Michael Owen or David Beckham's groin anymore. Mm-hmm. It is time. I mean, unless there are drinks involved.
Yeah.
There comes a point where you're like, yeah, no, you know, there's just more to life.
Right.
And I decided that I actually wanted to use my voice, you know, that whole voice thing, you know, being purposeful.
Absolutely.
Came back up. And there was just a lot happening in the world. It was just a really, you know, Pope John Paul died. There was a tsunami. Southeast Asia, Rafiq Hariri was assassinated in Lebanon. It was, the world felt like it was on fire. It was boiling.
Yeah.
And I was talking about, you know, sprained ankles and, you know, not making the first 11. And I just decided one afternoon that I was going to go and work for CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Call my mother up, who has forever been my champion. Her response to any idea is, what's the plan?
Yeah.
Gave her the plan. And a year later, I was working for CNN.
Fantastic.
It's incredible.
So what kind of, what was your first kind of, you know, sort of coverage that you were doing at CNN?
So they brought me in. This wonderful woman who's sadly no longer with us, Rena Golden, really made it her mission to bring in people of color and young people of color who didn't necessarily have any formal training.
Right.
And we came in on her own, like, Rena Golden School of Journalism, where we wrote in the newsroom for 2 days a week. So I wrote Wednesday, Thursday, and then I anchored Friday, Saturday, and Sundays.
Oh, wow.
The late shifts, the overnight shifts, where basically you would be safe. Because back then, the news wasn't moving at this pace, where every day there's something, every second there's breaking news. So you could learn on that shift, and you could, you know, interview Ariel Sharon's surgeon when he took ill, and you could ask a stupid question and they put the phone down on you.
Yeah.
Which was one of my experiences.
Oh my God.
And because it was a stupid question. But, you know, that's how I started. I started doing that and just, you know, over time moved on to more desirable shifts, shall we say.
Yeah.
Moving from 6 p.m. to midnight, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays to weekdays and all the rest of it.
That's fantastic. And this is the version of the morning show that I want to see.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, the one where they put the phone
exactly,
down
by the
you.
Way.
And there's
Just like a bunch of people of color just being under this, like, and learning on the job at CNN. That sounds great.
So then you were there for a long time. And what led to your
leaving? I mean, listen, it was an amazing time and, you know, covered more moments of breaking news from, you know, the highs, the lows, you know, elections, coups, plane crashes, wars, I mean, revolutions, all of that over 13 years, and did a lot of their Africa coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 14 years, was it 13 years, just felt, was beginning to get a little old, I have to say, by the beginning of that year. But also, the business has just changed, like we said. It's just become, I mean, there's kind of one story in town, sadly, because I actually think there are many stories to be told.
Yeah, no, there's one.
But there was one story, and it was beginning to make me feel icky, you know, just adding to, I always say this, you know, adding to the toxicity in the world.
Yeah.
And having to be part of conversations that were intellectually disingenuous.
Indeed.
Right? You know, the fact, you know, as we see even today in, you know, the last few days, that people are willing to regurgitate talking points that they know are patently false.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that I have to somehow engage you respectfully and do this merry dance for something that we all know is a lie. And it's not a matter of opinion. It is
a fact. Exactly. Or just like a gross misrepresentation. Like today we experienced the Elizabeth Warren $2 million story.
Ridiculous.
Which is absolutely insane.
Absolutely insane.
Every 33 years she made it.
Yes.
Nobody mentions that.
But every woman is about no one goes beyond the headlines and everyone does this false outrage that everyone engages in and luxuriates in. And it just got to the point where it was noxious, right? And also, I mean, you know, some will be offended, but there are certain people out here with certain viewpoints that are being given airtime, which, you know, on an evening I thought, I'm literally about to climb over this desk and I'm going to slap you if you say that one more time. If you kind of dismiss, you know, the entire continent of Africa and tell me to get over it, I'm going to climb over the desk and I'll slap you.
Well, that's the thing. The unfortunate thing is these people are like,
treating it as though you're just on, fine, you're on their regurgitating talking points and we should all talk to each other respectfully, but you have to understand that this stuff is very personal for a lot of us. So even though you can be a professional human being up there, they're talking about things that affect your life much more than they affect theirs.
And here's the other thing as well, this talk of the respect, it only seemingly goes one way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There is no respect for the actual people being harmed.
No.
And there's just this ridiculous level of false equivalency, which is just so tiresome. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sorry, and again, in the interest of being fair and balanced, bullshit. It's absolutely fucking bullshit.
Yeah. And so, you know, when the president says, you know, why don't, you know, Africans go back to their shithole countries and Nigerians live in huts and, you know, talks about only wanting Northern Europeans, that's offensive to me. And then when I have a guest on my show who says, well, Africans could do with being a little bit more grateful.
Oh, boy.
You know, at that point, you think to yourself, this cannot go on. Like, I cannot keep doing this. And so, you know, we reached a point where the network was wanting to make editorial changes and move the show that had come to LA. And that's how I ended up in LA because they brought a show to LA. We did it for 3 years and then decided that they wanted the show to go back to Atlanta, which is where I started. Mm-hmm. And I was like, between the work itself, this life move, and the fact that I actually just want to tell other stories.
Yeah. Yes.
Stories about women, story about people on the margins, story about people of color. This might just be a good time.
Yeah. Yes. That makes sense. I mean, the industry has changed so much. I even hear that from my friends in newspapers, you know, they're like, we can't do that, or we can't print that because we have 39 pages devoted to the same thing.
Yeah.
And they know it and they feel it. And it's really frustrating. It's really frustrating for them.
And sadly, that one story that is dominating so much of the news cycle is such an enormous moneymaker.
It is.
Yeah. It prints.
It's kind of cheap.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's kind of cheap. It's like, if you're a US based organization, it's a plane ride, it's a train ride. And, you know, you've got, all of them have outfits, you know, in the nation's capital. Yeah. It's kind of cheap. It's not like sending someone to Bangladesh, right?
Yeah.
And dealing with all of that security, logistics, fixes, run it.
No, it's local mess.
That's a good point.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Question, you know, so you were mentioning covering a lot of the Africa stories whilst you were at CNN. I guess, like, having an advantage of actually being able to spend your formative years, like, back in Sierra Leone, did you think that that gave you an advantage over some of your colleagues and being able to, like, tell certain stories or understand the nuances and past things? Or
I think it definitely gives you, I mean, it just naturally does. You know it. You know, you relate to it in a different way. So you definitely can, you can tell the story with just a slightly different tone.
Yeah.
Right. And in that, I think there's a kind of humanizing that comes with it because let's face it. I think, you know, when we talk about whether it's Africa or, you know, the Indian subcontinent or whatever it is, I mean, you're
having
black and brown
an outsider,
people, you know, black and brown people, when those stories are told, it's hard to put your finger on it, but, you know, when we watch it and we see other people tell our stories, you can feel the disconnect.
Yes.
You know, and not necessarily that comes from a place of negativity. It's just a disconnect.
Yeah.
Right? And so...
No, it's a book report.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when we tell these stories
it's
about...
It's a story. It's a human.
It's, you know, when Ebola happened and America decided that that story was largely unimportant until a bunch of Americans caught Ebola. And at that point, a helicopter followed the ambulance when it landed at Atlanta Hartsfield Jackson.
Oh,
meanwhile, Ebola, which did hit my country, Sierra Leone, nobody gave a,
nobody gave
a shit.
Ridiculous country.
And that was really difficult. And then when you see the the readiness with which people can be cavalier about black and brown lives mm-hmm. when those are captured on film and maybe exiting this world or in a state yes. of just, and the lack of dignity awarded to them or given to them, or the lack of
yes
compassion,
the humanity,
you can
lacking.
See it even in just the shot selection.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw that even in Kenya, the New York Times, when there was that shooting at the Duset compound when it was attacked a couple of months ago, and they put the picture of this blood strewn, you know.
No, it's disgusting. With it's dead like bodies. They don't like, see us as
people.
You would
never have done that. They would never have done that.
Because you're not allowed to even show dead Americans, yes. right? You're not like...
As you shouldn't be by that.
No, like, as you period. Should be. I'm not advocating for that. But that line is held and respected.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
For white bodies.
For white bodies.
Ones.
But for black and brown bodies, there is a, you know, oh, it was a mistake. It got through. But it never gets through the, you know.
No, because there's this implicit bias, and they think it's less than.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. You and like, let's all be honest about
totally.
That.
Totally. I mean, I write about that in my book because, you know, I say that's the dirty little secret at the center of every newsroom, that there is, you know, there's literally a scale. And, you know, at the bottom of the scale are black and brown people, and stories that are about, you know, indignities and injustices to black and brown women,
mm-hmm.
then black women.
Yeah.
African women, mm-hmm. oof, well, we're really plummeting.
My theory is that the rape crisis in India, which is a horrible problem, and there are a lot of societal ills that need to be reversed. I believe that has been such a big story here because they're worried about white women traveling to India. Like, that's all it is.
Also, for
I
me,
really think that's all it is. And you get to tourism. I think it's a tourism thing. I think that people here are like, wait, but I want to go to India. I love yoga. That's what it is. Like,
I feel that the tone is, look how worse it is than it is
that's
here.
That's what I think.
That too.
It's like, yeah, we're having that Me Too here, but, you know, women are getting, like, you know, gang raped. Yeah. So, you know, we're not as bad.
On the side of the road. I think it's, you know, I think it is confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's confirming the worst held notions of what it is to be from these places mm-hmm. and who we are as, you know, as communities of color. Like, mm-hmm. look, don't be the one civilized.
I mean, listen, we're here. We're here for a reason, right? We're here. It's great. I don't want to live in India. Absolutely not. We cannot treat people are people. Yeah. Like that's a very American thing. You the exceptionalism argument, right? Yeah, it's like, we're just better than everyone else.
Absolutely. But then I always come back to, listen, I live here and I love living here. Yeah. I've become an American citizen, and I do truly believe that there are opportunities to be had here in America that mm-hmm. aren't available to me anywhere mm-hmm. in the world. And there's an idea of exceptionalism, which mm-hmm. I find incredibly inspirational, right? But I always say, you know, as someone who is an internationalist and who grew up in Africa, mm-hmm. was born in Europe and has lived, you know, across those different places, I do always say, but, you know, the idea is real and it's beautiful, but we can also look at the data, which isn't really backing that up right now. And that we should acknowledge that
mm-hmm.
because that is the fault of our government, our leaders, mm-hmm. you know, it's the fault of spending choices that aren't allowing that exceptionalism mm-hmm. to really grow.
Yeah.
I mean, and to really kind of be inclusive and open to everybody.
Here's the thing. American exceptionalism used to be, or at least it was for me, something to strive for. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the interpretation is, no, it's a fact. It's mm-hmm. a fact. We are just more exceptional because of where we were born and how we were born, and that's
because of the lottery of life.
Yes, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you all could have been born 3,000 miles in that direction, and then what?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be the same special person?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
And when you look at the data, class mobility has declined.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you're more likely to die in the class of which, economic class of which you were born into, you know, now than, you know, 40 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just the reality. And we want it to be so. Each and every one of us sitting here wants that idea to be burnished and to be, you know, as strong as ever.
It's not real.
But it's not real, and it's becoming less so. And I also think these are important conversations we should be having.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
I have a question for you. One, you know, obviously working at CNN and doing journalism like 13 years. How do you deal with the heartbreak? Like covering stories of, you know, seeing people at their absolute worst, you know, in the midst of things that are very, very terrible. And I find it very, very hard to like do those, you know, you know, research those stories, even as a writer, and being able to leave them. And I don't, how do you do that for that many years? What are some...
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's hard to, I don't know whether you ever really leave them. I think each time, you know, they leave a trace on you, and you carry that. But in a way, as heavy as that can be after 13 years, because that's a lot of like markers, it also kind of reshapes you. I mean, it kind of, I think because of that, because I found it next to impossible to completely lose or let go of all of those stories, it kind of built in me the sense that I can't just be sitting here passively telling these stories. I have to kind of cross over and actively have influence, impact. So I think that's, I think I'm answering it in the sense that I don't think I did successfully. No. Because if I had let it go, the Nigerian schoolgirl story wouldn't have kind of taken over my life and reshaped my life in many ways. But it's that inability, it's that, I guess, that it's that feeling it keenly that kind of eventually tipped the scale and had me say, you know, this kind of just saying it's kind of crappy over there, and there's this great injustice that has been done. Now, moving on to the Golden Globe nominee.
That's not going to happen. But then the question is, and I think everyone's feeling it, or at least I'm feeling it, is like, how do you focus your energy to make a difference without feeling like overwhelmed by the world's pain? Because everyone's in pain right now.
Yeah.
So how do you, what are the mental tools? Like, what are the...
I mean, we talked about meditation right at the beginning, which, like you said, is like a mental bath, right? It is about trying to find stillness in the midst of the swirling storm that is picking up and not slowing down. It's also talking to people. I believe in support groups, you know, formally named as support groups, or just other people who understand that work. There was a lot to be said for sharing that with people and just kind of talking that out and talking it through. But I also believe in professional help as well, you know. I strongly believe in therapy, and in, you know, I'm a great believer in it and user of therapy. So I think there's that, there's exercise, there are all these other outlets. But I think for me, it's some combination of all of those things. And also, again, just, you know, I try and, like I said at the beginning, I'm trying to be very mindful in 2020, not just with gratitude, but with joy.
That
making a choice.
So important.
In the midst of this, that I choose joy. I acknowledge the pain. I see the hurt. I'm trying to make it better. But I also choose joy.
Yeah. But that has to be cultivated, because most of the stimuli we're getting is, isn't this terrible? Isn't this terrible? The world is terrible. This person's hurting. This person can't find his parents. This person, you know, there's just so much going on that it's hard to, when you are raised with the perspective of like gratitude and we're so lucky to have what we have. I think we all feel that way. How do you not just, I crumple. I have kids. Like, if I see kids in pain, it's over for me. Yeah. You know, like, take all my money, take a limb, I live, and how can I like enjoy my life when I know that so many people are in such a bad state? Like, that's been really hard. Like, that's a struggle.
That was a struggle for me as well. I think like going to Sierra Leone last year, just seeing a country that was so abundant and had so much taken from it repeatedly, and then seeing things still being taken from it, you know, in terms of like, I mean, just like resources from the absolute, from the ground being taken out, people being taken, lives being taken, and just seeing a, you know, seeing a place that is so hopeful, and just the injustice from the outside, you know, I found it incredibly overwhelming. But being able to, you know, take smaller actions and trying to, you know, kind of reconcile that feeling. But yeah, to do that for a range of stories over that many years, that must be quite a discipline in terms of like just, you know, being able to move on to the next story and being able to keep going. And
it's not easy, but I think the valve, the kind of release valve for me has been, you know, creating my own nonprofit that works with adolescent girls in Sierra Leone. It has been, I give my services a great deal to the UN. I do a lot of moderating and public speaking around issues there. And so I feel like, you know, more so today, now that I've left CNN, but at that point I was doing my bit to try and sway the needle back towards justice and fairness. So I think that that's how I kind of managed it, in amongst all the other things we talk about: meditation, health, running, and all of that, by actually being able to help move the conversation, help, you know, talk to decision makers.
What's the name of your nonprofit?
It's called We Can Lead. Women Everywhere Can Lead. And it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And it is the thing that I am undoubtedly most proud of. You know, we have about 500 girls in the organization who are young leaders, who are part of a four-year program. And we are literally helping them reimagine possibility and helping them understand their rights, their voices, and helping them develop their leadership capacity. And it's incredible to see, you know, people say, do you have children? And I say, yes, 500 of them. And they're, you know, they're my babies.
That's incredible. I mean, you've done so much. You've clearly been an activist since, you know, since you knew what it meant. Things mean a lot to you, and you like to do what you can to change them. But your job that you've had, I mean, you've been on camera talent for a long time. Mm-hmm. So there's that part of you that's like, roll up your sleeves and do the work. But there's also a big part of you that needs to look amazing doing it. what are your beauty rituals like? Do they
cleanse?
Your skin's amazing.
Well, thank you. It's airbrush. Because of wearing makeup for 8 hours a day, layers of it, and then having it touched up every hour.
People touching your face all over.
People touching your face all over. You know, the key, you know, then becomes just make sure you wash it off and you really allow your skin to breathe. And I started getting a breakout towards the end of my time at CNN, like on my jawline.
It's hormonal,
you know, hormonal plus all the crap on my face. And then I started seeing a dermatologist. Mm. So I see Dr. Lancer.
Oh, okay, yes.
And, you know, not necessarily the friendliest, it must be said, but undoubtedly the best dermatologist in town. Like, I think he just has so many people coming in. Right. It's like, next?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it's also super, you know, once you break through the kind of exterior, you know, very, very sweet. But that really helped. And I do microderm.
I love microderm.
Do that every couple weeks. I'm kind of
every
off.
Couple weeks?
I'm doing like, it's every 6 weeks.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Great.
But I kind of haven't been recently.
Yeah. Can you tell us about your cleansing ritual? Like, what do you use to get those 8 hours worth of makeup off your face?
I use Lancer's line.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He has his own line. So I exfoliate every day, which he says is the key.
Yeah.
So I exfoliate every day. I use the exfoliator, the polish, I do the cleanse. And then at nighttime, he has me on a regimen that is glycolic acid and salicylic.
Salicylic.
So yes, exactly. Salicylic acid. And I alternate that.
That's right.
Each day.
Wow.
And then use this moisturizer. It is like a full time. You're like, bedtime isn't a, you know, a 5 minute splash your face.
No. I got stuff to do. Like, I have an agenda.
Lucky I'm single, so it's okay. I can take as long as I want
to do it.
Like, ain't nobody saying, babes, what's happening in there? I'm good.
You're like,
loving me, love me, love me.
You look incredible. The self-love is showing, by the way. It's like, incredible. I'm falling behind you guys.
So yes, definitely that. And then, so that's really that ritual, that morning and nighttime ritual. And now that I'm not on camera, I don't wear much makeup, which is like the best.
Nice.
Yeah. It does mean people see me in the street and they kind of like, you crazy.
Because,
you know, I'm rolling up. I wear a lot of hats as well. Yeah. If I'm not, like, I wear a lot of beanies. Mm-hmm. I wear a lot of baseball hats. Mm-hmm. I wear a lot of sneakers.
Is it so people don't recognize you?
No, I'm just I'm like this, I guess, fashion chameleon where, you know, I really like that kind of like tomboy hoodie thing. And then I like gowns.
Camilla says that sometimes too. She's just like, well, you know, being a modern woman is like some days I might show up in a ball gown and some days I might, you know, F you. I'm not going to, you know.
Exactly.
See what mood I'm in.
Yeah. I love that. You know, I totally, totally love that. And so I embrace it, particularly in LA where nobody really gets dressed up unless it's for a major
an
thing.
Event.
Exactly.
So I'm in my element here, but it does mean I do get caught out every now and then. And I'm like, I really should have at least a little.
But it's also, I'm sure in some ways, it's kind of a bit of a, like, you know, a reaction to being like on camera and being put together for so many years that to then have this time where you're just like, ah.
Yes. Like. Yes. No, it's just like I don't have to worry. The only problem about that is when you go days without any makeup or really doing your hair, and then suddenly there's something and you have to put it together.
Oh yeah, you're like, what are
and then it's like what should be 20 minutes becomes like an hour.
It does.
Because like, you know, the getting from the basement up to
to the penthouse. Yeah, I'm always like, oh right, a mustache. Right. That's, you know, when you don't look at yourself for 5 days.
Oh my god. So I must tell you, when I moved to LA, I get my brows done at Damone Roberts. He's like the brow king, and he's just a love. And I remember the first time I was in his chair, and I've come from Atlanta and I'm in his chair. And so he does my brows, and then he takes a look at my top lip, and he's like, sweetie, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Wow.
I keep the strips in my purse.
So, you know, I love that. I was like, oh, you're in LA. Like, this is a new level of pain and discomfort.
Because you want to, in LA, it's about looking good without anything on.
Yes.
Absolutely. Like, nothing.
Yes,
on.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's the whole point. But then there's a little maintenance. Sure.
I mean, although I am known to say to makeup artists, I'm like, I'm not trying to look natural. I'm trying to look flawless.
Yes. I love that.
It's nice to be clear about your brand. Thank you
very much.
So spray it on, baby. Yeah.
The next thing we usually do is Beauty of the Week, where we spotlight a woman or anyone. Sometimes it's my son. Sometimes it's my brother. Yeah. Sometimes it's an author that we just would like to shine a light on this week.
My Beauty of the Week is a woman called Alison Davis, who runs the wedding planning company called Davis Rowe. Essentially, she's like led the charge in having these wedding websites like The Knot stop promoting plantations as wedding venues.
We support that.
Why would you?
Oh, and there's so many other places in the world. Why?
Exactly. So many beautiful places in the world to get married. Why would you choose a place that is a source of pain and slavery and murder? But it's, I mean, she did a great job, but it's also The Knot first said that, you know, we're no longer promoting these venues. And then Pinterest just followed voluntarily, because Pinterest are largely, you know, they have an enormous amount of business
big
in wedding. It's a wonderful bit of change. And, you know, again, it's very startling to me. I for one cannot see the appeal of getting married on a plantation.
Claim anything.
I don't, but it's also
no need.
Not for me. But it was like, you know, Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds got married on a plantation, and for a while I was like, I just assumed that one of them was from the South, and so
no,
that was
no,
was like,
they just don't. Like, no,
she's from Tarzana. He's from Canada. Like, why would you?
He literally doesn't.
They should know better. He's Canadian.
Yeah,
they should know better.
They don't know. I mean, oh my god. I bet the second anyone pointed out, they were like, "Whoops."
Yeah,
they were my landlords for a while, and they gotta say they're the nicest people
that
I've ever met.
So happy. But
they're so sweet.
Your landlords,
like too sweet. Like too
really
sweet.
They look like
they both. I remember they just like. I just got a call being like, oh, we're going to come check on the house. And I was like, fine. And I opened the door and it's them. She's in like a sweatshirt and jeans. She's like the hottest person I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
Not a stitch of makeup. He's just so tall and nice and handsome. He's like jiggling the door handles, like knocking around. They brought her brother because they were out for the day and he was on crutches. They were just so nice. I'm not saying they should have gotten married on a plantation.
Yeah.
I'm saying I'm willing to throw them an ignorance bone.
It was probably a wedding planner, to be fair, who came up or gave them a bunch of.
But also,
no, no one should get married on a plantation.
But I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not giving an ignorance bone to that. You know what a plantation is.
I'm not allowed to throw
an
ignorance
bone. Yeah, no, I agree.
You know what it is.
I definitely am not allowed to throw an ignorance bone about it. I'm just eating nuts over your
video. You're just going to pretend you're going to like lose yourself in your food.
So, a shout out to Alison Davis, but Davis Rowe also throw incredibly beautiful weddings. If I hadn't gotten married in England, I would have hired her. She's fantastic. Also, she's one of the very few high profile like black women as wedding planners, and she's amazing. And so that's my beauty of the week.
I am divorced, so my second wedding she can do.
Boom.
Great.
Boom. Done.
I'll start it up.
There you go.
You want to do it again?
Yeah, I'd get married again because, you know, I choose joy.
Yeah. There we go.
God, we got it. That's got to be on my resolutions list. Choosing joy. That's a really good one. My beauty of the week is this kind of hilarious woman named Jen Gunter. Do you know who she is?
No.
She's an OBGYN in San Francisco. She's very polarizing online. She's always pretty mad.
I love it. I love her already.
I love an angry woman. She just wrote this book called The Vagina Bible, kind of all about your lady parts. And she was like the jade egg crusader. She's the one who like made a big stink about, you know, pulled out all the research and was like, why are you selling jade eggs and saying that it's good for your vagina? There is no medical research and no, you know, and they had said in olden times, in this culture, in that culture. And she was like, no. There's also no historical.
Yeah.
Was that just basis. Goop making up shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just copy.
The only one who did it, though, it's before copyrighted. We unfairly.
They're like, they've been around no, the jade roll of things. They yeah. They pay quite a big fine.
Yeah. They have to pay a fine Gooped for it.
Yeah.
For the claims. But, anyway, yeah. She's worth a follow on Twitter. I just find her fascinating. She's always like debunking insane things that people say about like female wellness, where she's like, there's no papers to support. Like, it's just funny. I don't know. I like a woman who's just like, this is my nonsense. One thing. I'm an expert. And she constantly is like, well, I'm an expert.
So what are you? Where did you get your PhD you read something on the internet? In lady parts? Mm.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I find it wonderful. And what I also, her personal story is very much, she grew up in a very conservative household where there's a lot of shame around sex and like her, and she is really all about eradicating that. She thinks it's ridiculous.
That's amazing. I love that. I follow this OBGYN on TikTok, who is hilarious. TikTok. And she
what does an OBGYN talk about on TikTok?
Well, absolutely. Honestly, a lot of very helpful advice to young women, but told via hilarious videos.
That's where all the young women are.
She's doing she's doing the Lord's work. Yeah. She's just, telling these women, just like, oh, your boyfriend's telling you that, he, doesn't like the feel of a condom. Fuck him.
Don't fuck him.
Metaphorically fuck him, but don't actually fuck him. That's what I'm saying. He's trash and he doesn't care about you.
Your boyfriend's telling you that, the male pill has already been, approved. Yeah. He's on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but she also gives immensely helpful advice, about things like the morning after pill and things. So it's just like people say, there are lots of bad myths about it and that it's not effective after X amount of hours. But she'll also be a reminder. It's like if you are above a certain weight, the morning after pill is not effective for you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You need to take two.
So yeah, if you're
body's absorbing it, and
but the weight is not huge. It's 165 pounds or something. It's not it's 20. It's a little bigger than me. Yeah. It's not. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Who's your beauty of the week?
It is the Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations, Amina Mohammed, who is just a badass. And it is just really lovely to see an African woman, a woman of color, that high up in the UN and, at the center of conversations, as we're talking about, to help make this world better. Mm-hmm. And we know that when women are involved in negotiating peace or any kind of settlements, those settlements are more durable because they're more inclusive. And it's just nice considering the fact that the UN, principally tends to help the developing world, that it has a woman from the developing world. She's from Northern Nigeria and has her at the table and helping shape the UN response to crises around the world. And I popped in to see her last week and I kind of doorstepped her. And she was very welcoming, which was very, very sweet of her.
So you've heard of cold calling.
People were like, well, hello,
Amina. Have you heard of just showing up?
I was like, hi. And I was having a meeting with somebody on her staff and he said, the DSG. Because I just want to be referred to as the DSG. Yeah. Like, the DSG is here. And we know each other a little, but she was very gracious because I did not have an appointment and was very sweet. So she's my...
Try it.
Just try it. Just show up
in the UN. Yeah.
Totally.
They love that.
They
love when people of color just barge in.
Hello. Hi. You help my people, so I'm here.
Hi.
I have some notes. I'd like to talk about your response in Rwanda. Can we talk about that, please?
That's awesome. The next thing we do this time, we wrap it up, is we play a game called Rosebud and Thorn.
Oh, I love
Rosebud and Thorn, which I play with my son. A rose is a beauty wellness highlight. A thorn is a beauty wellness low point. And a bud is something you're looking forward to in the upcoming weeks. We can start. Cam, what's your rose?
My rose at the moment, it's my expat net. It's fantastic. It's essentially
my expat net.
It's a VPN that you download so that you can watch TV of foreign countries.
Yeah, yeah.
So I use it primarily to watch TV from back in England and specifically Gogglebox and Come Dine With Me.
I love Come Dine With Me. I forgot about it.
Do you know what it is?
No.
The best TV show.
It's a competitive dinner party show. And so it's
all like immigrant moms.
It's hilarious. Perfect. But it's also then some like oddly kind of like whimsical, like very like odd British, like quirky couples. But essentially four different people host dinner parties at their house over the week. So they're all just put into a group and still take turns having a dinner at each other's house. And they come up with these whole menus and they're so competitive, but it's also competitive in a very kind of like British way where everyone's like, you know, being like snidely competitive, but like pretending to be very nice.
So good.
And it's also just like, it's just such a show of weirdos. And it's also really funny when like the meals fuck up, like, you know, they'll be sitting there and like someone served like raw pork by accident. It's so much fun.
And
it's
they're just hilarious. Like regular people.
Yeah, they're just regular.
No one's a professional chef. No. You just, and where are the meals held? Where's the...
At their homes. Wow. So they go to each other's homes, they judge each other's homes, and it's just really funny.
Oh, it's like couches covered in plastic.
I love this.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's one of my favorite jokes. So I use it to watch that. I also use it to watch Gogglebox, which is one of my favorite TV shows, which is literally a TV show about people watching TV. They tried to do an American version called The People's Couch, which was not good.
The People's Couch.
I know, it's terrible. But also, there's a great, if you like a dark, moody British drama, there is a new show called Gold Digger, which is fantastic. And it's starring Jemima Rooper, who is fantastic. Like, if you liked Dr. Foster or anything like that, you'll very much enjoy it. But yeah, my expat net, it's about $40 for a year and it's wonderful. So,
love this.
That's a good one. Can a sweatshirt be a beauty product?
Yes, it's wellness.
Okay, great. I was like, if I bring up a sweatshirt, Camilla's going to slap me across the face. I was like, these wool socks my mom got at Kmart are awesome. Okay, about the sweatshirt. I have worn it every day for like a while, but I swear it's clean. I went to this lovely independent bookstore in Ann Arbor, Michigan called Literati, which has been around since 2013, I believe. It wasn't there when I was there, but it's wonderful. It's one of those places that just has like great recommendations from the people who work there, and it just has a really nice vibe. They have a great kids section. They have a great cafe, and they have great merch.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So I bought this sweatshirt in a medium, and it's from a company called, I mean, just order one from the website, but the company is called Bella and Canvas. But go to literati.com, I believe. Go to the website, order a sweatshirt. It's beautiful, and support an independent bookstore.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this. For me, my river would be, there's this line called Alafia.
Oh.
Which you can get.
I've heard of this, yes.
You can get it in Whole Foods, from Target, Thrive, and it is a line created by an African man from Togo.
Okay.
Full disclosure, I'm talking to them about helping them work, tell the story of their work, because I think it's so amazing. Mm. I was already using the products and have them in my bathroom. And basically, it's all organic, natural products grown by women in villages in Togo, and they're supporting maternal health and education programs. So I love the products. They have a black soap that I use, and they're just amazing, just big-hearted. It's like products that make you feel good and are doing good.
I love that.
That's fantastic. It's good for kids too.
Yes.
People buy it a lot for their kids because it's like hypoallergenic, but I will definitely buy more of it.
Done.
Absolutely.
That sounds awesome. Cam, what's your thorn?
My thorn. Oh my God. We talked about it briefly. That stupid, that Peloton advert.
It's so dumb.
It's what in the Black Mirror? Genuinely, all of Peloton I find quite creepy as a brand. Mm. And it does remind me of the Black Mirror episode of like 50 million merits or demerits with Daniel Kaluuya. And it is... But it's so creepy. But so they released this ad. We'll link to it. You've probably already seen it. It's horrifying. It's basically this woman has been gifted a Peloton bike by her husband who is apparently...
Gently pressures her to take a video every day?
Every day. And the look of terror in her eyes is very clear that she's in an abusive marriage. And that if she doesn't lose
£5 that he is going to leave her and take the child and get full custody because he comes from vast amounts of parental family wealth and she'll never get the kid. Why? It's a very, this is a very long story, but it's horrifying. It's the weirdest advert.
I had a few responses to it. And the first one was, oh, is this just like poorly directed? Like it was poorly cast. It was poorly... But was there ever a way to make that palatable? I don't think there was. No. It was just a bad idea.
Yeah. I think the badly very executed of, you know, being gifted a piece of exercise equipment in that manner is the subliminal message. Yeah. Not even subtle, all even subliminal.
Even if she were like, it's what I've always wanted.
Yeah.
Great. You gave her something she always wanted. Awesome. Exactly. She likes to spin, but I don't know, all of it was very bad. It,
just poorly thought out. It was one of those ads where that you could tell that basically there was not a single woman in the room where the campaign was put together.
And the fact that, but then you think about all the people that watched it and were like, yes. And then you think about the fact that there was no statement. And when there was a statement, eventually it was, but all these other people supported us. Here are the emails.
Yeah.
I was like, that's your official statement?
Like, you may have to like go back to the drawing board and
walk that back.
Well, the justice is that their Peloton shares plummeted vastly afterwards. So misogyny doesn't pay. Well, sometimes it does, but it's nice to see it when it doesn't.
I agree. Well,
misogyny seems to be paying pretty well for the most misogynist. Exactly. Reality check.
What was your thorn for the week?
Mine was, okay, so rock bottom.
Oh, no.
You guys, I mean, the wheels have been coming off for a while, which is why I am going to take a month off. But all of my medication is just done. Like, I have a blood sugar medication. I have a cholesterol medication. And I have a supplement that I need to take. And I just didn't. Like, they're just done.
Oh, no.
They're just empty. And I'm like, okay, well, how do I
guess
what
I'll
do I?
Die?
I called the doctor and she was like, well, you got to come in for blood work. And I was like, right. So I went in for blood work and then they got to call in the. It's been like a whole process. Oh, and then I'm like, why do I feel so bad? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because I'm not taking my medication that I'm supposed to take. But that I think is all under control. So hopefully I'll have it in the next week. I haven't taken my multivitamins. I'm a mess, you guys. Oh, I need a sticker chart like nobody's business.
Can you go and get like a vitamin shot just to tide you over?
Maybe. Yeah. I need something. And it's just not great. It's
I think
not
a great situation. Be,
there needs to be like a spa that's just about like depleting yourself as a woman. Where you just like lie down and they infuse you with whatever it is you need. Yeah. And then at the end of the day, you go home and you're like, oh.
This is what Should it feels like them? To be human. Did Wait, we just come up with an idea
I think,
right
I think
here?
It's a good idea.
Where is it called Foxy Brown Spa?
Where truly this. They sit, it's called, the way they sit down with you and they're like, oh, here's what you're missing.
Yeah.
You need this and this and this and this. We can do your blood work. Oh, let's call Liz Holmes. And it's like a Theranos. Like, immediately they're like, here, let me like smell your hand. Aha, iron.
But I don't think we're going to get the money we need to grow the business.
You know what? She ruined it for all of us, by the way. The one time they gave a woman who didn't deserve it money. And now look what happened.
No, but to be fair, they gave blonde woman money, which is part of what has been, you know, revealed from this that,
no, you're
that
right.
they played into certain types.
Exactly. Aisha's thorn.
My thorn, actually, I just stumbled upon the Golden Globes nominations.
Oh, no. They are a mess.
Mess.
Any female directors? No. Anybody?
They don't exist.
No,
actually.
They don't exist.
Can we acknowledge the people who did Queen and Slim? Or
who
Honey
are they?
Boy
What's that? Never heard of it.
Farewell. Or Little Women.
Little Women, you know.
Little Men?
But, you know, no, but instead they decided to honor all the little men.
Yes.
And so they all have nominations. And that's
Best Director Todd Phillips.
Totally. And like, hey, Can Me Too, it? Time's up. Who gives a
Doesn't
shit?
Doesn't matter.
Let's
Best
just
Director
honor.
Todd Phillips is up there with Oscar-winning Suicide Squad.
Oh
let's
my
just
God.
Yeah,
it's so bad.
Let us just
let's think about that, shall we?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that
yeah.
is a major thorn.
Yeah.
That I I'm still trying to figure that one out. I mean, I think I saw something about the Hollywood Foreign Press Association only having
73, 74.
Okay.
I've been through the process before. I used to be an agent and all this stuff, and it's very. I mean, it's
a charade.
Yeah, I mean, it's a total under 100 people voting compared to the Oscars, it has 900 or something.
But they're also peers.
Yes, exactly. So this is just a bunch of people want to ingratiate themselves with.
It's whoever throws a party, sex up to their
And they love a celebrity. And they love a celebrity, what they call it. Yeah. But here's the thing that, like, you know.
They're like, who's going to be at the party?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But it's also just like, there was only one nomination for Succession. I'm sorry. Like, Succession was white excellence.
Yes.
Like, I'm like.
They're not even as good as they
are. Yeah. Like, give them everything. What are you talking about? This is Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Come on.
There's always one. It's the canary in the coal mine. We're like, Rocket. Okay. Yeah. I don't need to see the rest of them.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, Harriet, you know, and Cynthia Erivo, I mean, at least she gets a nomination. But again, you know, it's not getting the widespread acclaim that it should.
Remember how we were talking about not being consumed by rage and apathy?
Choose joy.
I am choosing to be joyous. Think about
something else.
Yes.
What is your bud, Cam?
Oh, wait, well, actually, my bud, also film related. I am so looking forward to the Zola movie.
Oh, you are?
I'm so looking forward to it. Honestly, what look. So Zola was like... Zola invented Twitter threads.
What?
Do you remember, like, I say, so it was a couple of years ago, and it was right before Halloween, so there were so many Zola Halloween costumes. But it was this this black woman who basically starts off a tweet with saying, like, let me tell you about this really fucked up weekend I had with this crazy girl who I worked with in a Hooters. And it was this incredible Twitter thread. The twists, the turns. There was so, to be, there are still things that, like, me and my friends quote from it.
That's hilarious.
Like, same, just, like, saying that someone's lost in the sauce. Also saying...
It's really good.
No, lost in the game and lost in the sauce. And then, do you want to trap this weekend? Still don't know what that means. It's all great. But they are finally, the movie is nearly here. It's premiering at Sundance. It's directed by Jacinta Bravo. Jeremy O'Harris, who wrote Slave Play, is one of the writers.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
Fucking amazing.
Killer Films also, produced it?
Also, Cousin Greg from Succession is in it. I am so excited. I cannot wait.
It's going to be really good.
It's
going to
be amazing.
I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I want to watch.
Yeah.
On your month off.
Yeah, no, really. Okay, logline. Zola partakes in a wild 2-day Florida trip with a sex worker named Jessica, her boyfriend Derek, and Jessica's violent pimp who went by X.
Oh.
It's going to be wild.
But if oh my God, just refamiliarize yourself with the Twitter thread.
I will. Let's link to it.
Excellent.
Amazing.
Okay, what is something that you are
my bud? Two goals that I set for myself like the year before I had kids, which was 6 years ago, was I was going to learn Spanish and I was going to learn guitar. But I have just gotten my Spanish textbook and CDs in order, and I'm going to give myself a Spanish immersion class. It's going to be great. I will at least understand it. I know this is about languages. I will at least understand it by the time I'm done. Might not be able to speak it, but I will be halfway there.
That's important.
I'm loving this.
Yeah.
I got it. I've lived in LA 15 years. It's ridiculous. It's embarrassing.
It's annoying. I do rely on Doug for a lot of Spanish because I only did like 1 year of Spanish at school, but he speaks a lot better than that, and I often do rely on him for a lot of Spanish, which is terrible.
I'm turning it around. Turning it around.
Yeah,
that's what I'm looking forward to. What's your bet, Aisha?
So I'm going away for my birthday in January, and as part of this beach holiday, I'm getting my hair braided. I'm getting kind of caramel blonde Beyonce braids, long single braids. I'm very excited about
this. Excited for
this. I have to say, very single braids. I mean, expect to see pictures of me with
this
like crown of braids on my head on the beach.
Amazing.
So I'm very, very excited about all of this. And then a 2020 bud is starting work on my next book proposal. Opening it up to the universe to see what story should be told.
Exciting.
That's fantastic.
I want to hear more about this. We have to have you back on.
Indeed.
Choose joy, man.
Yeah. Anything you want to promote or plug? Anything we should be reading or watching?
I am reading Ta-Nehisi Coates's book, The Water Dancer. Reading that, loving that. But all I want to promote is people finding time for themselves and being kind to themselves and to others. And don't take it all too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, take a breath, choose joy.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining us. This is amazing.
Thanks, Aisha. Thank you.
For show notes, including links to the products, services, people, and causes mentioned on this episode, you can subscribe to our official newsletter, Stuff and Things, through the link in our show notes or at foxybrownspod.com. See you next week.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.